This is Dennis Tech of Radio Birdman, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we'll speak live with Evan McCormick about his new WGXC show, Music in Time, which premieres tomorrow at 10 a.m. on WGXC. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the
news.
This is the network.
On June 17th, three bands come to Tubby's in Kingston. First E, the trio of Jason Sidney Sanford, Thaddeus Zedek, and Gavin McCarthy play rock music. Live Skull, the renowned 1980s post-punk experimental rock band, is back together and are playing on this show with Upper Wilds, who record for Thrill Jockey and feature multi-instrumentalist songwriter Dan Friel, who's best known for his work in the band Parts and Labor. E, Live Skull, and Upper Wilds play at Tubby's in Kingston June 17th, and you can find out more about this show and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Oak Pizzeria Napolitana in Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Valerie White reports for Porcupine Soup that the Caro Town Board meeting last week degenerated into chaos as highway department concerns and town employees' salary issues dominated the discussion. Town Supervisor Jason Watts had to call for order several times as shouting matches broke out among attendees. Caro resident Leon Updegrove claimed that there was too great a discrepancy between salaries for the highway department and those for other employees like the town's bookkeeper. Quote, we pay you, unquote, Updegrove said. Quote, why should other town employees sacrifice? Why don't you sacrifice, unquote. At a meeting on May 9th, the town board increased the bookkeeper's salary by more than 10% to approximately $70,000. Updegrove contended that town highway employees are not properly compensated for the work they do, which includes vital services such as snow plowing and road repair. Highway department employees are unionized, Updegrove told the board. Quote, you can't find employees because you don't pay, unquote. Several employees of the highway department were on hand for the meeting and weighed in on safety issues and salaries, though more calmly than Updegrove. Quote, we're losing guys, unquote, highway employee Jim Gilmore said, and others from the highway department agreed that low salaries are the main cause of difficulty in finding and replacing workers. Watts pointed out that the town provides benefits that many private employers do not. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com.
Midhudson News reports that Representative Antonio Delgado is now a representative in name only. At the beginning of May, Governor Kathy Hochul picked him to be her new lieutenant governor, but he did not immediately resign the seat. And Delgado has not been voting in person in the Capitol since at least May 10th, just over a week after Hochul tapped him for the new job. In a May 10th letter to the clerk of the U.S. House of Representatives, Delgado invoked the House of Representatives resolution that allows him to designate a proxy to vote in his absence. Delgado wrote, and I quote, I write to notify you of the designation of a proxy to cast my vote. I am unable to physically attend proceedings in the House chamber due to the ongoing public health emergency, end quote. Adding, and I quote, I hereby grant the authority to cast my vote by proxy to the Honorable Joe Neguse, who has agreed to serve as my proxy, end quote. Apparently, Delgado is using COVID-19 as an excuse, although he made no public announcement about contracting the virus recently. Representative Neguse represents the 2nd Congressional District in the state of Colorado and will now be casting votes for the 19th Congressional District in the Hudson Valley. Delgado's office did not respond to requests from Mid-Hudson News seeking additional comments on the proxy votes. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Steve Hughes reports for the Times Union that thousands of families will now be eligible for child care support as part of a $2 billion expansion of child care funding in New York. Governor Kathy Hochul said on May 20th the funding was part of the state's recovery from the economic damage caused by the coronavirus pandemic, as well as a recognition of the lack of child care options for families statewide. Quote, these historic investments in New York State's child care system will allow us to forge a new path forward for parents, especially mothers, unquote, Hochul said in a statement. Quote, it is the right thing to do, the moral thing to do, and will supercharge our economic recovery and support working families, unquote. Approximately 1,500 child care providers closed between April 2020 and last February, a period of just 10 months, according to data from the Schuller Center, a research and advocacy group focused on family issues. The Capital Region was considered a child care desert, with not enough providers for the number of children in need before the pandemic. As part of the investment, the state's Office of Children and Family Services will expand the eligibility levels for families in August 2022 to up to 300% of the federal poverty level, or $83,250 for a family of four. The state also recently released $30 million in federal funding to expand child care programs in the parts of New York without enough child care slots. The state received more than 1,700 applications from potential new child care providers, and awards for that program are expected in the coming weeks, Hochul's office said. Information on the child care assistance program is available from local departments of social services. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
The special master's finalized district maps for the state Senate had one major change locally. Columbia and Greene counties are together in one district after receiving public in favor of the union. Both counties are now in the new 41st district, which stretches west to Binghamton and Ithaca. The district lost part of Ulster County to make the changes. That sets up a contest between two incumbents. Republican Sue Sereno, who represents the current version of the 41st District, and Democrat Michelle Henchy, whose 46th District got shifted to Schoharie and Albany counties and points north, but who lives in Saugerties in the future 41st District. On May 22nd, officially announcing her campaign for the seat, Henchy said, and I quote, Upstate New York has faced decades of underinvestment It's why I ran for office in 2020 to fight for the needs of the community that raised me by finally investing in our aging infrastructure, supporting our family farms, funding education, ending the housing crisis, and battling the opioid epidemic that is ravaging our towns and cities, end quote.
Bill Williams reports for Columbia Green Media that motorists using the Taconic State Parkway between Philmont and the Berkshire Connector will have road work to contend with through the month of June. The extensive $11.5 million paving project will impact travelers in Columbia County, said Heather Pillsworth, public information officer for New York State Department of Transportation Zone 8. The paving was scheduled to begin this week and will encompass more than 14 miles in both directions, between Exit 91 in Philmont and the Berkshire Connector of the New York State Thruway in Chatham, Pillsworth said. The roadwork will pass through parts of the towns of Claverick, Ghent, and Chatham. One northbound and southbound lane is expected to be closed Monday through Fridays from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., Pillsworth said. The construction is expected to be completed June 30th. The project is one of the largest scheduled to take place in Columbia County this year. It will improve the quality of the pavement and increase its longevity while maintaining safety attributes associated with roadway services, Pillsworth said. Some areas throughout the work zone will be controlled by flaggers. Motorists are urged to slow down and drive responsibly in work zones. Fines are doubled for speeding in a work zone. Up-to-date road work and travel information is available by calling 511. Read more about this story at the HudsonValley360.com website.
Pete DeMola reports in the Times Union that the finalized map for the new state Senate 46th District finds veteran state senator Neil Breslin now vying to represent the area. The newly mapped 46th District will now include Schenectady County, but without the city of Schenectady and Niskayuna, and Albany County without Colony and Montgomery County. Breslin, who is 79 from Bethlehem, currently represents the 44th District, which currently covers parts of Albany and Rensselaer counties, including all of the cities of Albany and Rensselaer and the western fourth of the city of Troy. The changes move Republican incumbent Senator Daphne Jordan, who lives in Half Moon and represents the 43rd District, further north and out of Rensselaer County. Instead, Jordan faces a primary battle against another Republican incumbent state senator. Republican Jim Tedesco, who currently represents New York's 49th District, now says he will run for the newly created 44th District instead of the redrawn 46th District. Former GOP State Senator Kathy Marchione said, and I quote, "I and many other Saratoga County Republicans, the majority of them GOP committee people, that I've spoken to are upset and disappointed with Jim Tedesco's actions," end quote. Marchione formerly represented the 43rd District. Tedesco said, and I quote, "This new 44th State Senate District has large areas I've run and won in with big numbers for years, and we can't let it get into Democratic hands," end quote. Schenectady County Legislator Michelle Austerlitz and Therese McCallman, both Democrats, have announced bids for the seat. The other local state Senate election with a major shakeup is the Democratic-leaning 43rd District that includes Colony, Rensselaer County, and parts of Washington County. Democrats Andrea Smythe and Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple have announced campaigns there, as has Republican incumbent Assemblyperson Jack Ashby, who lives in Castleton-on-Hudson. Primary elections for U.S. House seats and state Senate seats will be held August 23rd, while the primary election for the governor's race and state assembly contest is June 28th. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, it will be partly sunny with a high near 70 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 51. And on Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 71 degrees. And Wednesday night, isolated showers after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 51 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tuesday, May 24th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. Tune in to Catskills' Corey McClaslin, The Forgotten Geek Show, all kinds of 80s music, entertainment news, special features, and more. At noon, it's time for Rob Saffer, who beams in from Ulster County with a special on composer Ennis Xenakis, who passed away last year. From 2 to 4 p.m., we tune into a live broadcast with all sorts of artists from Ukraine. It's part of a 12-hour broadcast from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. that'll be broadcast on Wave Farm Radio. From 2 to 4 p.m., you'll hear it on 90.7 FM. 7 p.m., tune in Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, with Amanda Lees and Jenny Getty talking about the latest movies. 8 p.m., we're live from Hudson with Michael Wilde and his Mostly Single show. He's got a box of records to play this month. And at 10 p.m., we're live from somewhere in Columbia County with Dan Seward and the Battlefield Earth program on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On June 17th, three bands come to Tubby's in Kingston. First, E, the trio of Jason Sidney Sanford, Thaddeus Zedek, and Gavin McCarthy play rock music. Alive Skull, the renowned 1980s post-punk experimental rock band, is back together and are playing on this show with Upper Wilds, who record for Thrill Jockey and feature multi-instrumentalist songwriter Dan Friel, who's best known for his work in the band Parts and Labor. E, Live Skull, and Upper Wilds play at Tubby's in Kingston June 17th, and you can find out more about this show and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
This is Mitch McConnell when I'm up in the Catskills to go hunt bear and visit my friends in the Greene County Legislature. I always tune into WGXC. I love that weird show, the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour, but it's not on very often. What a bunch of crazy Yankees up there. Where is that station again? Oh, now, remember, it's at 90.7 FM on the dial in my Lexus. I wish we had something like that in Kentucky. Don't forget to vote, y'all.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, May 24th. Early morning temperatures range from 47 degrees in West Conesville to 55 in Kingston. Soil temperature has dipped to 59 degrees. We have another nice day in store with a high of 69 happening at 2 p.m. Skies turn more sunny in the afternoon. Overnight temperatures fall to 50 degrees, then bounce back up to 75 degrees tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. 52 degrees overnight takes us into a Thursday with a slight chance for rain all day and a high of 73. Overnight, the rain will pick up and get stronger, turning stormy Friday afternoon, which will have a high of 77. Pollen levels for today will be high. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:29 a.m., high tide at 11:08 a.m., low tide again at 5:56 p.m., then high tide once again at 11:52 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 68 degrees. Sunset today will be at 8:02 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:23 a.m. Looking way up, we see yesterday, inexplicably, auroras were seen as far south as Michigan. Solar wind speed is currently 415 kilometers per second at 3.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 132. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Milad H. Mazari of Murray, Utah. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is WA3QIZ. Do you read me?
Seymour, isn't it about time you made a real friend?
Mother, please, I'm communicating with my fellow hams.
How do I talk? Push this button here. You're all losers!
You're tuned in live to the WGXC Morning Show. In just a few minutes, we're going to speak with Evan McCormick, the latest new WGXC programmer whose show Music and Time debuts tomorrow at 10 a.m. Tune in. We'll be right back. Next, we hear from a group with members of Dimaxion and Stereolab. They're called Ghost Power. And this is their 2022 album, Ghost Power, and the track Astral Melancholy Suite.
We'll be right back.
Hello, can you hear me? Oh. Oh, hi, Evan. Yes, I assumed it was you. But I'm listening. We're hearing, listening through the board. I picked it up. So I'm going to put you on hold, sort of, but you'll hear the radio stream, and then you'll hear me introduce you, and we'll come right in. And I'm just going to ask you to describe the show, and this will be over with me. All right, so hold on a second. All right, that is from the brand new Ghost Power record, the Astral Melancholy Suite on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. And now we're talking to Evan McCormick, whose new show Music and Time debuts on WGXC tomorrow at 10 a.m. Evan, are you there?
I'm here, Tom. Good to be with you.
Good to hear your voice, too. You're from Catskill, a fairly new Catskill resident?
That's right. My wife and I moved here in 2020 in the midst of the pandemic from Brooklyn.
And tell us about the show. Why is it called Music and Time, I guess, first?
Yeah, so the big idea behind that is that, you know, I've long believed, as I'm a historian by profession, that you know, people don't, music doesn't just exist, it kind of exists, and what gives meaning to it is the particular moments in which people connect with it. So the simpler idea behind the show is each episode we take an album and we kind of delve into it and look at the social and political context around it and try and reconstruct what listeners might have been thinking about, what else was going on in their worlds, and then we kind of expand out from the album and look at some other moments in time when people might have been thinking about the same thing while listening to other music. And that's the basic idea.
Do you think people sort of nostalgically bring music from certain eras of their life? How do you think music works nostalgically?
Yeah, well, that's actually one of the things I want to explore is like, you know, when is it that a particular album becomes relevant again? So, you know, rather than kind of, you know, one way of looking at music, which I think is valid in a lot of cases, is kind of like the obsession with the musician and the kind of enduring power of a particular song or a concept album or something like that. But I actually want to kind of give a little bit more purchase to the listeners themselves and kind of think like, when is it that a particular album kind of becomes relevant again? So I think it's actually, there are a few different things. I think one way that it happens is when history rhymes. So in tomorrow's episode, we're going to be talking about environmental crises and that kind of were happening in Los Angeles around the time that the Flying Burrito Brothers debut album, The Gilded Palace of Sin, came out. But then what I do in the second half of the episode is look at some other moments in which kind of attention to ecological crises kind of makes some of the music you know, that comes out in earlier episodes relevant in later times. But another way is, yeah, like people have personal connections to music, which also, you know, nostalgia is another mechanism through which that takes place. And that's one of the things we're going to be exploring in later episodes.
And I guess like people's relationship or how they listen to music or if music is obscure or impossible to find has sort of changed. Like Big Star is kind of the big example. Their records came out and like nobody noticed them, sort of, except for a few people. And then they became these sort of secret things that you had to know about to, somebody had to tell you about to even know that it existed, or hearing it was not very easy. You know, they weren't in many record stores even at some point. So, but now that's sort of all changed because like everything is available now and there's millions of like obscure records that now people have access to and become later things. Is that part of the show too?
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the things that, so each episode is a little bit different. And one of the themes that I want to explore in some of the future episodes are the actual mechanisms by which people listen to music and look at some of the turning points. So I haven't figured out which album I want to do this for, but I was thinking about having an episode about either BMG Music Club or Columbia Music House, those kind of infamous, you know, eight CDs for a penny clubs in the 1990s, and looking at how that might have propelled the popularity of certain records. Also, a little bit more obviously, looking at the way that Napster in the early 2000s might have shaped the way that things that would have been previously much more obscure kind of exploded. I'm thinking about records like, you know, the White Stripes, White Blood Cells, which kind of came out in the summer of 2001 at the height of the Napster era. So, yeah, to your point about Big Star, I think the looking at turning points in the way people access music and how that changes over time is another way to kind of think about the relationship between between music and time.
Yeah, there was a time where listening to music, I remember taping on cassette things off the radio because that was the way to save them. If you didn't have an endless budget of buying records, you could record the new Michael Jackson single on just right off the air.
I have an actual a memory of my mom showing me how to do that. And I also have lots of memories of accidentally taping over stuff. But yeah, to your point, the means of accessing music, it changes so rapidly. So that's one of the fun things about kind of placing a particular album in its moment is that, you know, listeners today, this is true for me, kind of thinking back to the 1960s, 1970s, one of the basic questions I ask is like, if you wanted to go listen to this album, like, where would you had to go to get it? Another episode I'm going to be doing in the near future is on Lou Reed's New York, which came out in 1989. And one of the things I want to do for that episode is maybe reconstruct a little bit about where people would have been going in the city to buy this record. What are some of the main record stores, whether they were chains or independents? So I love that concept.
And music is sort of really tied to technology, too. I play a little game. When I hear a song I don't know, I try to guess what year it came out based on the sound. Like, those 80s records all have those big drum sounds that you can tell, or you know, the way the studio technology was, you can tell if it was recorded in the 50s. I guess that plays into the show a little bit, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like nowadays, I mean, for better or for worse, I feel like the rising tide of production quality means so much of it sounds the same, or there's kind of a newfound emphasis on the pristine quality. But I think, you know, thinking back to my youth and the music I listened to, it's, you know, finding the kind of faults in production or the kind of fuzzy qualities is some of the joy in understanding how it was made, you know, whether it was put to tape or recorded digitally. So that's another kind of turning point that we can look to, some of those albums that were the first to be, you know, recorded using digital technology in the 90s and 2000s.
And then like a record like some people think Nebraska is Bruce Springsteen's best record, and it was recorded at home on a four track, sort of, I don't know if anticipating is the right word, but it did anticipate a lot of what records sounded like in 10 years later.
You're preaching to the choir. Not only do I love Nebraska, and I've thought about doing an episode on that, but I'm somebody who for years actually recorded my own music on a four-track cassette recorder, so I'm probably partial to the DIY aesthetic in that regard. I love Nebraska. And you're right, it's actually kind of funny thinking about the way, you know, it's progress is not just a linear thing. Like, I think some people actually, there's like a, maybe it's a nostalgia factor to your earlier point, or they could do something creative by going back to recording on tape or going back to more primitive means to get a different texture than what you can get digitally.
Yeah. And that example is actually, he was recording demos, and then they decided, well, this is much better than anything. If the E Street Band recorded State Trooper, it would have been a much different song.
Yep.
All right. So what people will hear tomorrow, we're heading to L.A. in 1969.
1969, Los Angeles, when the Flying Burrito Brothers album came out. It's not an album about the environment, but the argument in the show is that if you were in L.A. at that time, you were thinking about the Santa Barbara oil spill, which happened about a week before that album came out. and the omnipresent fight with smog that the city was enduring. And some people point to that moment as the beginning of the environmental movement. And so I kind of I play some of Graham Parsons' songs that kind of deal with the environmental reckoning that Los Angeles was facing. And then we go from there and look at some other moments where I think music was framed by disasters like Three Mile Island, the Exxon Valdez spill in the 80s. And, you know, not the most uplifting topic, but I actually think it's a pretty interesting one to kind of listen through to music through time in that lens.
And certainly something I think people are thinking about today.
That's actually a point I make in the show. We've become, as the environmental movement has grown, and then with the crisis of our time with climate change, you don't have to look as hard to find music in which that environmental sensibility creeps in. So I play a few songs from the last few years that kind of tie back nicely to what I'm saying about the 1960s.
All right. We've been speaking with Evan McCormick, whose new show on WGXC is called Music in Time and debuts tomorrow morning, Wednesday, May 25th at 10 a.m. on the radio. Is there anything else listeners should know?
No, but I hope they'll join us. It's, you know, at the very least, it's a fun way to travel sonically in time. And I hope they enjoy the show.
All right. Tune in tomorrow to Evan McCormick's new show, Music in Time, on the radio WGXC. You're listening to 90.7 FM.
Marry me. Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We remain committed to supporting the peace and stability across the Taiwan Straits and ensuring that there is no unilateral change of the status quo.
President Joe Biden says the United States would provide military aid to Taiwan should China invade the island nation. Taiwan declared independence from China after World War II, and officials in Beijing have long wanted to annex the country. U.S. support of Taiwan has been a point of contention with China as the two nations wrangle over trade and human rights issues. Biden's comments came as he met with Asia-Pacific leaders on Monday to reestablish diplomatic relationships, 5 years after former President Donald Trump pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Through a translator, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida told reporters Biden's new Indo-Pacific economic framework has the support of his nation.
Having said so, Japan hopes to see the United States return to the TPP from a strategic perspective.
The New York Times reports a dozen Asian-Pacific nations will join the new economic bloc. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky gave a virtual address to the World Economic Forum in Davos Monday. Speaking via a translator, Zelensky urged the forum to push for more economic sanctions on Russia and criticized world leaders for not taking such actions in 2014, when Russia annexed the once Ukrainian territory of Crimea.
If that happened back then, that unity, that pressure on governments, on companies, would Russia start this full-scale war? Would it bring all these losses upon Ukraine and upon the world? I'm sure that the answer to this question is also no.
The Supreme Court Monday stripped back the ability of incarcerated people to challenge their convictions based on ineffective legal representation. In a 6-3 decision, the justices held federal courts cannot consider new evidence when revisiting criminal convictions handed down by state-level judges. The decision may mean a death sentence for the two Arizona men on death row who brought the initial suit, alleging their post-conviction lawyers were incompetent and did not provide adequate representation during their trials. In a dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote the decision violated the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees the right to an attorney, and added the ruling, quote, hamstrings the federal court's authority to safeguard that right, unquote. Vice President Kamala Harris visited the Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. Monday to mark National Mental Health Month. Harris said there is an urgent need to address the mental toll the pandemic has taken on the nation's healthcare workers.
The problem existed. This burnout issue existed even before the pandemic.
Harris's comments came as the U.S. Surgeon General released a new advisory on health worker burnout and resignation. The report projected America will be short more than 3 million essential low-wage healthcare workers in the coming years. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Here's legendary jazz bassist William Parker with Lakota Song from his 2021 album Trancadisis, a selection from Migration of Silence into and Out of the Tone World.
Thank you.